A Wild and Clear Call. Written and read by Fresney. Fandom Sherlock BBC. Warnings for Omegaverse. Part of the Variations on an Equation series. Where the long-ago ancients grew their starcraft in the hearts of red giants. It is said that the void was silent, but it is not so. Planets and stars have their magnetic songs. These Leviathan, in their tender infant years, listen to that song, sung by those nursery stars, as they consume them from within. It is how they grow thick shells, capable of withstanding not just the void, but broadside battles with long-forgotten foes. They come in breeds, not classes. There are no schools of craft, for all they roamed in grazing fleets those latter days, empty and echoing, feeding off of solar winds and singing magnetic melodies. But now, we must speak of the dreadnought, its designation a string of wavelengths that would take up to a year for a human to understand. They called ear MR8 for reasons. Just reasons. Ear had actually consumed ear's own nursery star long after the need for such star-killing craft had passed, or even the reason why such a thing would be grown. The system of Arcadia fell first. 11 worlds counting the moons. And who could forget the pleasure palaces of Nuovo New London, or the womb gardens of Orchid Falls? Gone would be a faint word, like a ghost at the feast, adrift and cold. They looked like scattered cherry blossoms on a breeze, which was very poetic until magnification was applied, and the frozen bodies came into view. So the Home Corps was founded. No one would say how they figured out this would work. It was a secret. The process was supposed to be a bit like taming falcons and Omega, because Alpha minds weren't wired that way, and Betas couldn't take the stress of, well, it. And the Omega had to be in heat when it all went down for, reasons. John didn't like to think about it. He'd had a suppressor node since he'd been sorted. Never so much as a flush of heat. There that Omega would be, flushed with hormones, and they would lower themselves down a cliff face, by which one meant a long tether into the heart of a star, to find an adolescent the size of a moon and, yeah, that. Time was the core only took the best and brightest, the shining stars. They fell fast before the dreadnought's fleet, because Ear had a fleet, because an unstoppable star killer needed a fleet of star killers to snuff out the night sky. Really. Sometimes John wondered about the ancients, mostly while sucking down yet another tasteless protein tube, and wondering why he was training to do this. And by training, there was a 6-week stim course, 6 Terran weeks. After they popped the suppressor node out, he'd almost hyperventilated when they took it out, almost begged them to put it back in. He did not want to go through heat. Oh, sure. He downloaded the ROM stims with their stories of steamy surprise presentations or malfunctioning suppressors, and wham! Characters were frelling in airlocks or vent tubes, but actually taking it out? 6-week course. Long enough for the drugs to run through their systems and for biology to kick in. In the dorm, they told jokes about the Leviathans. Tentacles up the ass, mostly. The drawing in the siphon station off the third porthole was really very artistic, for ass art. He wondered why he was doing this when he touched his thigh where the suppressor should be. He was doing this because they'd take him, because he was needed, because the Corps would pay to clean Harry up and replace her organs with ones that weren't second-hand, because he'd been inside Maywand when it imploded, clung to a pocket of air inside a tanker for 3 days before they found him and Harry. He had the synthetic arm to prove it. 6 weeks went by a lot faster than he expected. Medtech Lee Strahd checked his vitals. She was exactly the kind of beta he'd always gone for. Silver fox with a competent smile. You're right on schedule. Your couplings are well within range. Are you experiencing hypersensitivity to light and scent? He nodded, forced his dry mouth to spit out, yeah, hypersensitive. The overhead lights were piercing his skull. There was a sort of tense charge through his whole system. He pressed his legs together and felt damp. He shifted uncomfortably. Strahd said, time to get suited up. John followed the blue lights out of the med bay to where a half dozen Omegas were getting buckled into their Stamford suits. It stood for something. He really could not remember what just then. He arched his back. Everything felt terrible. He wondered if he could quickly shove that probe up his ass and get a little relief, which was kind of a no. Ingetech Hudson smiled at him through her faceplate. She'd told him that she'd worked over 1,000 drops. Now there was a crackle as she said through the comm, now don't you worry. I may not be your mama, but I am your technician. We spotted an adolescent Leviathan just 20 minutes ago. You'll find your Leviathan. Don't you worry. He wondered how many she'd told that to. If she told everyone in their class. 6 Omegas and 1 Leviathan. He wondered how many would come back. The old beta adjusted the buckles of his suit. Another Engtech, Brad Street, said, remember, you have 93 minutes before your suit breaks apart. Don't cut it too close. As if that hadn't been the name of a popular stim a few years back. As if they didn't all know. Although, it is a fast way to go, dearie, said Sun. When he was nowhere near ready, he held a thumbs up on his synthetic arm. He'd promised himself he'd use his right arm. When they lowered his heated arse through the hatch at the bottom of the skim ship, not a Leviathan, just something that could reflect a red giant long enough to dump some graduates down. John drifted on his long billy cord. His suit was lizarded for core work, cheapest bitters. Who knew how long the thing would really last? He ached for a cock, a knot, not a lot of any of that in the heart of a star. He was not adrift. He was being flailed about by internal currents. He lost sight of the others. What he'd heard was true. He really did take second place to survival instinct in the face of imminent death. Good to know. He almost lost his billy cord, but hey, 6-week course. He didn't vomit in his suit. He thanked his Stamford suit. He was still alive. He hit something. Something big. Something very big. He grabbed on and let go of the tether. He crawled along its surface until he found what could be referred to as a hatch. He went in, crawled through a long claustrophobic tube, and really wouldn't that be the way to die? And tumbled into warm, moist darkness of Ear's body cavity. He had to move fast. Ear was young, so Ear's antibodies weren't already consuming him. But they'd be coming at him soon enough. He followed his training. He walked down the lantrificle until he came to an atrial nerve and cut it with his blade. There was a very noticeable lurch. He swallowed, although this was really several parsecs past now and never. And yeah, Ear had noticed him. He undid the latches on his helmet, and there was a hiss of escaping air. The suit would keep him alive for at least 3 minutes, and hopefully by then. Soft tendrils brushed along his hair and down his face, and that ass tentacle picture was very much on his mind, but They stopped at his neck, slowly wrapped around him, cradling him. The tendrils developed tiny spines that prickled his skin in a thousand places. Oddly, it didn't hurt. He hardly felt them go in. He gasped as the Leviathan slid nerve endings through him, connecting to his own nervous system, currently pumping with adrenaline and the need to breed, full as Frell with couplings, with the survival of the species. A series of images, bright and incomprehensible, then... then... and... and then... a slowly imploding planet, and then a star, then... which was a surprise, that something that lived in a star even knew what a planet was. Another flash of images. Ah, this teen had been taking trips already outside Ear's star. Clever. The planet. He sent an image. Well, a whole lot of images. About some serious mental trauma of the death of a world at Ear. Maywand had been a planet of 11 billion beings. Not that the Leviathan cared. Not that that meant anything to them. Not that... also... and then... and then Ear really hooked in. So, here's the thing. You've already seen the vids of the Battle of Reichenbach, the Feely tropes. Frell, gentle being, you probably have a bio plushie. And yeah, we started with the end. But this was the moment when SHLK connected with Ear's translator, like the ancients used to do. That one in a million chance that John would actually have enough ancient genes to do more than send static, because it wasn't like there was any way to test it without doing it. Because without translators, Leviathans were basically meant to destroy planets and eat stars that the ever-loving ancients left to graze the universe, because the ancients were utter morons, or bastards, or both, while John... nerve fibers of an alien reacting to the couplings in his system and sending a message that could be best described as the empty void of space. John sent back a nebula that coalesced into a million bright stars, and then John groaned, and the sound echoed in the cavity. Ear didn't really wait for a response. John could feel the tendrils pushing through him. His lungs stopped. For a panic second, he struggled. An Ear did something to trigger every pleasure center in John's body at once. He groaned and the sound echoed. A tendril caressed his throat, feeling the vibrations. More pleasure triggers. Ears did something else, and John came in his suit, which was built to handle that. Training, yeah. 6 weeks training. Ear would be providing oxygen to John's blood now. It sent a series of complicated impressions of magnetic waves, which made no sense. And seriously, he did not help with that. Then... and then the waves again. Ear's name. High on the really good biochemistry. John kicked his feet in the dark. He thought, hey, good to meet you. What he got back was the most aching sense of emptiness. He thought about a galaxy spinning in the void, full of stars and planets and moons and people, beings, life. He thought about cocks because he was an Omega. He thought about knots and pins and really good biochemical stimulation. Ear shuddered. He felt Ear shift. Faint dim lights glowed on, but John closed his eyes. He saw what the Leviathan saw, roiling currents of energy and magnetic symphonies. And his Leviathan felt what he felt, which, since he'd been in heat for hours in a Stamford suit, was a pretty strong message of frel me now, which was, yeah, not exactly what happened. Well-drawn ass art notwithstanding. Tendrils frantically burrowed their way deeper and deeper, providing oxygen, nutrients, sensation, stimulation, images, ideas, concepts so vast that tears rolled down John's face. John hazily thought that it had to be an Omega, not because Omegas knew how to give, but because they knew how to take. He took it all and sent back a laughing, "Oh God, yes!" Now, you're wondering when this story will deliver on the promise at the beginning. It started with star-killing dreadnought fleets, but that was just a tease. John wasn't the Omega who launched 1,000 Leviathans, but 3 hours inside, and he was the one who launched the Leviathan that was needed, the one that leapt straight out of that star's heart, hungry to know. There's a significant difference between that and cracking planets. They had adventures. There were passengers later, military crew, but there was only one translator. One captain, which, as it happened, was the Leviathan yourself, which considered most of them morons. Well, Ear was the size of a moon, with the brain to match. Not that Ear was too friendly with Ear's own kind. Ear thought that enormous Leviathan carrier was a slow, lazy tub. John sent back a sense of jealous envy at the size of Ear's brain, and got a crackle of energy in reply. But what you're probably here for is the story of Reichenbach. Some say that's when S.H.L.K. died. We call Ear that because most of us can't communicate in pages of electromagnetic waves. They'll say that Ear ejected John in a tiny pod that Ear had grown secretly in the last few cycles of Ear's life. They'll say Ear burned in Reichenbach's system, taking more R8 with it, leaving that star-killing fleet to become just a bunch of random stargrazers. They'll say that mainly because it drums up more downloads. But that was not so. Even its own creator, even an ancient, couldn't have killed that ship, that Leviathan. John did come awake in a pod, oxygen filling his lungs for the first time in years. He breathed on his own for the first time in years. He ate for the first time. It was just as tasteless as before. He ached with how empty he was, with how space looked black and empty, and not full of symphonies of magnetism. John drifted from port to port for 11 solar years, his body pockmarked with where he'd been once connected. It was not the end of the story that he hunted down the dreadnought that had been more R8's left flank in the battle, who had peppered SHLK with shots. It was not even the end that John felt a call one morning, and it was a wild call, but it could not be denied. He got in a suit and went out into the black, with only a tether to hold on to. He went to the lonely black and the emptiness. All he asked for was a vast ship and stars to sail nearby, for the kick of connection and the universe's song and solar webs shaking. That's what he asked for a laughing yarn from a fellow rover. As it happened, that's what SHLK asked for, too. Ear pulled him on board, and the connections weren't exactly the same. They couldn't be. Damage had been done. But lost circuits found new paths. John connected and saw what his Leviathan saw. He felt what his Leviathan felt. They went after that dreadnought. They fooled Ear into attacking a moon that Ear thought was SHLK. They took that dreadnought down. That was not the end either, for this story has no end. They still fly on. If you put out the distress beacon and your adventure interests them, you might even see them. Just don't waste their time, please. They've things to do and wonders to see before the quiet sleep when the long trick's over. but that won't be for a very long time. After all, no one has ever seen a Leviathan die of old age, nor their translators either. The program has only been going for a little over 100 years. So, a long trip through the black that's not empty at all, but full of the song of the universe, if you know how to hear it. The end.